If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. President Obama will hit the road this week in an effort to sell Americans on his vision for how to improve the country's economy. The White House says that the speeches are partially aimed at laying out the stakes of the fall budget battles with Congress. A new report shows that the Senate-passed immigration bill contains a $300 million slush fund that would allow Hispanic advocacy groups to advise illegal immigrants and help them apply for legal status. One of the groups that would receive money from the bill is the National Council of La Raza, which used to employ current White House domestic policy advisor Cecilia Munoz. The report suggests that the money is somewhat of a payoff to win the White House's support. Speaking at a policy conference in D.C. today, Munoz did not address the report. Rather, she focused on how the White House will try and pressure House Republicans into supporting the Senate bill.
The Senate bill, or something very much like it, would pass if the House got a chance to vote on it.
Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living, dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at www.tn4action.com. That's www.tn4action.com. The phone number to call in and join our conversation is 718-305-7176, 718-305-716. Thank you for tuning in. We have a good show lined up for you tonight. We're going to have Ben Cunningham with us. He is the head of the National Tea Party, and he was involved this weekend with the part of the Beat Lamar campaign. They had a rally outside of a Lamar Alexander event. And a little insight here. I think they were expecting 500 or 600 people at the Lamar event, and I had a couple of friends that were actually inside the event, and I was just curious, you know, what kind of turnout they had. And so I asked him how many they had, and he said, well, we got 250-300. Well, we had at least that outside, okay? So there's a lot of people in Tennessee, even though we don't have a candidate yet, that know we want to get rid of Lamar. They're tired of Lamar Alexander and the Lamar Alexander type politicians that we have, and we have way too many of them in Tennessee. Don't know when an actual candidate will come forward. We had some good speakers at the event, and I suspect that the Beat Lamar folks may have a few people in mind, and they just haven't fully committed yet. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. So we'll have Ben joining us here in just a few minutes. And we're going to have Kathy Henners from the Daily Roll Call blog. Now, Kathy's a retired law enforcement officer from upstate New York. She's been in Tennessee a couple years. And Kathy is an expert on the Muslim infiltration of our country and our state. She tracks the different things that the Muslim Brotherhood is involved with and how they are spreading their tentacles in our state. And we're going to talk a little bit about tonight about the whole DIMI problem we have. You know, if you're concerned about what you see going on in D.C., if you follow this at all, you know that Obama has appointed known Muslim Brotherhood operatives to the Department of Homeland Security. And known operatives have had access to high-level defense issues, you know, defense agencies. So that should concern us all. Well, unfortunately, we have people here in Tennessee that aren't much brighter than that. Both within our government, and you have businesses that just don't get it, that just don't understand that this front that a lot of these Islamists put on is just that. It's a front. It's there to deceive us. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, some of the accommodations that are being made across our state and our schools and other businesses where people are essentially bending over backwards to accommodate the Islamists. And a lot of people aren't even aware of this. But she's going to come on the show and talk to us about that a little bit. And then we're going to have Richard Archie from the Tennessee Firearms Association. Now, Richard is very well versed on the Tennessee State Constitution in general and, of course, the history of gun rights within Tennessee. He's been involved at the legislative level with bills that we've that have been sponsored the last few years. And so we would be hard-pressed to find a better expert than Richard to come and talk to us about this. And, you know, with everything that we see going on with the government and the federal government wanting to encroach on this right, and now they seem to be leaning towards using this recent situation with Martin and Zimmerman, that case, and it seems like they're going to use that as an angle to attempt to restrict our gun rights. So that's something we can't let happen, and we have to, you know, be aware that that is on their agenda. And so Richard will give us some good insight there, and we'll understand what our rights, our gun rights are in Tennessee as citizens of Tennessee, in addition to our Second Amendment rights. So we should have a pretty good show lined up for you tonight. The number to call is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. And I'll just talk a little bit about the National Tea Party event and the Beat Lamar rally. We'll go back to that. I attended. Like I say, we had a good turnout. And as I mentioned a minute ago, that's about the same turnout, or we may have actually had a few more than what they had inside. And from talking to a friend of mine who he's actually a county chair, a GOP county chair, and I won't mention his name, but he and another chair were actually delivering a message to Lamar. They had a letter signed by I'm not sure how many chairs involved, basically laying out to Lamar Alexander that, hey, look, you're hurting the party. And your last vote on Senate Bill 744 was just flat out wrong, wrong for our state, wrong for our country. And he also told me that it looked like a good number of the people in there who were there for this Lamar event, they didn't seem to have a lot of enthusiasm. It's kind of like they were there and they were holding their nose. Well, I understand why they'd be holding their nose. I don't understand how they could still even support the guy. And that's something that we need to think about, too. You know, we have some conservative legislators in our state. But Lamar got an early start this year for somebody, for an incumbent with all the money he's got, the name recognition. He really started pretty early. And I think, you know, the goal was obvious, to try to squelch any challenger and, you know, raise money, scare him off. And that's understandable on his part. What's not understandable is the conservatives or legislators who call themselves conservatives who endorse this guy. I mean, they endorse the guy who made votes that I don't think most of those guys would have made. They've endorsed a guy, even though they call themselves conservatives, they've endorsed a guy who is anything but conservative. I mean, when you think of Rhino, when most people think of Rhino, Lamar Alexander is one of the names that pops in their head. I mean, it's there. He's got to be in the top five across the country, and regardless of where you're from. So that's pretty disappointing that we would have our U.S. representatives, almost all of them, I think except maybe one, has come out and has endorsed Lamar Alexander. So that's hard to understand why they would do that. If they really want change, why are they endorsing the same old thing if they want change? And, you know, one of the things that a lot of people say, well, he's got so much money, he's got so much name recognition that there's no use in trying. Well, I don't think that's true, and I think Ted Cruz proved that that was not true in Texas. So they did it in Texas. I don't know why we couldn't do it here in Tennessee. I guarantee you, just like in the Scott Brown race in 2010, that if we have a challenger, a decent challenger with no skeletons in his closet, or at least no recent skeletons in his closet, I think Lamar is beatable. And the amount of money that will come from out of state to beat Lamar, I believe, is huge. So it can be done. Hopefully a candidate will emerge soon. But I think that those of us in Tennessee, I think we need to, whether it was our U.S. representative or whether it was our state rep or our state senators, they've come out and endorsed Lamar. I think that deserves a phone call. You know, what are you guys thinking? Well, Ben will be with us here in just a second, but I've got a caller on the line here. We'll go to Kurt. I'm sure Kurt has a little something to say about Lamar. Kurt, would you like to comment on this?
Here you go again, Dave. You remember Sergeant Schultz on Hogan
yeah.
D. Rose? I know nothing. I think I best just leave that alone. I'm here with ears perked and with interest focused on what Richard's going to bring to us, and of course Kathy and Ben for the moment. Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, we should have Ben with us here in just a minute. Anyway, back to my comments. It just seems that, you know, there's no excuse for endorsing somebody like Lamar. I think that's something that we should call our legislators on. And because how do you take them serious? You know, how do you take them serious when they say how conservative they are and how, you know, they complain a lot about what D.C. does. Well, but what did they do? They just endorsed one of the biggest rhinos in the country. And I'm sure it has a lot to do with money. You know, he's not hurting for money, and of course the people that donate to him would maybe be inclined to donate to some of them if they supported him. But, you know, if money is the final straw, that's the final deciding factor, then we're in bad shape. If there's absolutely no principle that trumps money, then there's no way we can fix our country. But, you know, I have a hard time believing that there aren't some good, in fact, I know there are some good conservative people with a lot of money who put their money where their mouth is, and they would gladly support a conservative that ran against Lamar Alexander. And so I think that will happen. I think probably in the next month or so, 2 months at the most, somebody will come out and we'll have a decent challenger. And one of the things we're going to talk to Ben about to get a little more clarification, because if you get a lot of the, and I'm sure some of you get the same emails I do about different groups talking about beating Lamar. So you got three different organizations. They're all working towards the same goal, and they are actually working together. They're just not the exact same organization. So I'm going to see if you can clarify that for us for a little bit. 718-305-7176. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Call in if you have a question or a comment. We'd love to hear from you. And Ben will be checking in with us in just a couple minutes. If there's anybody out there who attended the rally, we'd love to hear from you. So give us your take on it. And by the way, you know, there were people, I drove like an hour and a half to be there. There were people that drove a lot longer than that. You had people coming from East Tennessee, three and a half hours. And this was not an inside event. This was an outdoors event in the 90-some-odd degree heat Saturday. And, of course, the people who set this event up, they had to get there. It started at 3:30. I'm sure they were there probably a couple hours early setting up. You had people lined on the road coming in to where the event was being held with their Beat Lamar signs. They passed out 260 Beat Lamar shirts. So I don't know if Lamar Alexander drove in or if Lamar Alexander flew in, but regardless of what he did, he saw a lot of people there, and they weren't inside the event center where he was hoping to see them at. So that's something we need to remember. And he is definitely beatable. Okay, I think Ben may have just popped up on the line here. Hello, is that you, Ben?
It is, Dave. How are you?
Doing fine. How about you?
Very good, very good. The rain has stopped, so I'm pleased. For now,
yeah,
anyway.
And there was no rain Saturday. We probably could have used a little rain Saturday to cool it down.
Wow, I'm telling you. I was hoping for at least an overcast sky, but it was a great success, and I'm pleased that the rain held off, even if we had to stand under 95-degree weather for 3 hours. It made it all worth it.
Oh, yeah. Now, when you set this up, let's talk about there's your organization. Of course, you're the chairman of the National Tea Party. Michael Patrick Leahy with BeatLamar.com was there.
Right.
Lee Douglas from the 912 group was there. Eric.
Right. And Campaign for Liberty was very active also.
Yeah, Campaign for Liberty. Eric Stamper is also involved in this some way, somehow. Can you kind of lay out for us how these different organizations are working together on this? Who's doing what?
Sure. The Tea Party groups in Tennessee, as you know, have been working together for a long, long time, really since the 2009 beginning of the Tea Party. Groups tended to cooperate and work together. And for the last 2 years, we've had the quarterly meetings, typically they're quarterly, here in Tennessee, of the Liberty and Tea Party groups around the state, and that meeting has moved around the state. And that's one problem with Tennessee. It's so darn wide that it's hard to find a location where people can easily travel from all parts of the state. But we have moved the location around and had these meetings quarterly of Tea Party groups around the state, and it's been a great way to coordinate and kind of facilitate the coordination of activities like this rally Saturday. And basically, it's like most other Tea Party groups, it's very organic. Somebody sends somebody an email and says, hey, I think this would be a good idea. Lamar Alexander's having a fundraiser or a campaign event, and it would be a good idea for us to rally outside just to make our opposition obvious and public. And Campaign for Liberty and 912 Group of Rutherford County or 912 Project of Rutherford County and National Tea Party kind of got together and decided to make an event of it, and all of us sent out to our email list. And what we wanted to do basically is just to point up the voting record of Lamar Alexander. The real problem with Lamar Alexander is that he talks like a conservative, and for years he has come back home to Tennessee, and he's talked in these grand, sweeping conservative terms as if he is a conservative. But then he goes back to Washington, D.C., and votes like a Susan Collins or somebody from a Northeast liberal Republican state. And that's not how the voters of Tennessee wanted him to vote. But for years, the Republican Party has been pushing Lamar Alexander, and I think people are just fed up with it. They're fed up with this kind of schizophrenic approach. And our object on Saturday was to simply say, look, we're not going to put up with this anymore. We're going to make this man's voting record public. And we had a little handout. You may have seen it with the five most prominent congressional scorecards. And they all showed Lamar Alexander scoring at 35th. In other words, if you rank the 46 Republican senators from the most conservative being number one to the least conservative being number 46, Lamar Alexander, the very best he scores is 35th. And typically it's 39th or 40th in that range. And that's just not the type of conservative that a very deeply red conservative state like Tennessee deserves. We deserve somebody like a Ted Cruz who
exactly.
gets the high courts.
And I hate to jump in, but we're going to have to take a break. But no, Tennessee does not want Susan Collins in plaid. We'll be right back. You're listening to Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance. I've got Ben Cunningham. We'll be right back in just a minute. We're going to go to a quick break.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on. Smile. Oh, honey. He's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah. Maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No Big Joyful Smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. I'm on the line with Ben Cunningham of the Nashville Tea Party, and we're talking about the Beat Lamar event this past Saturday in Smyrna. Ben, the numbers that the turnout that we had, now somebody told me that there were 260 shirts that they sold, that they gave out. I don't know an actual count. But as I was talking before you came on, I had a friend on the inside. Okay, he's still a friend, even though he actually went to the Lamar event. Okay, to his credit, he and some other county chairs who will remain nameless passed a letter on to Lamar that they were not happy. Okay, and that he was hurting the party, and they were upset about his votes, especially 744, the immigration vote. And I asked him because I was curious, well, hey, how many people did you have in here? And I said, 250, maybe three. And I said, oh, okay. I said, well, that's about what we had out here. And he also said that a lot of the people that were in there didn't really look like they were all that enthused. And I can understand not being enthused. I really can't understand being there to support Lamar, but I can understand not being enthused. Was the turnout about what you expected, or did it surpass what you were hoping?
No, the turnout was a whole lot more than I expected, it was certainly more than the Lamar folks expected. I had a little intel myself the day before, and the fella that will remain anonymous had told us, a very good source, but he told us that the Lamar people were telling their folks that only, quote, a handful of people would show up for this Tea Party event. And we were expecting, somebody asked me the couple of days before, and I was saying 100 to 150, something like that. But, gosh, we got there, and cars started pulling in and then pulling in and pulling in. And we parked them all down one side of this, about a two-acre lot there. And then we had to go the other direction. And then we had this big van show up from McMinn County and another two big SUVs just packed with people. From Chattanooga and another van, and it was a whole lot more than I expected. And I really didn't get a sense of how many people were there until I went up on the road, there on the road where you turn in. And my goodness, the Lamar folks, you could see they had this kind of strange look on their faces. But they did, because our folks were stretched all the way about 300 or 400 yards up the road there. So they had to come by those folks. Then they turned into the main road where the event was, and our guys were stretched out about another 100 yards. So it was a really great event. People were anxious to be involved, even when it was 95 degrees. And as you know, it was hot as heck out there. But nobody left. I thought surely some people would start leaving after about 30 minutes. But people stayed. They were there to participate. They were there to raise their voice and be a part of the political process. And they were there to tell the Republican establishment, all those folks who were inside, that we're not happy with you guys. You know, you're basically trying to shut down any kind of debate of Lamar Alexander's record. And that really was what really, to use the colloquial expression, pisses me off. And that the whole Republican establishment is basically trying to bully and intimidate anybody that wants to run against Lamar or even talk about running against Lamar. In fact, we got an email forwarded to us a couple of months ago from one of the state Republican chairmen who had come out. They all the former state Republican chairmen or persons in Tennessee had come out and endorsed Lamar. And so one of our Tea Party folks knew one of the guys and wrote him an email and said, "What the heck are you guys doing? Lamar doesn't even have a challenger. Why are you coming out endorsing him when the primary really hasn't even started?" And the former chairman wrote back, and he said, this is a direct quote from his email. He said, "Lamar wants to make sure he doesn't have a primary opponent." Think about the arrogance of that statement. Lamar Alexander wants to make sure that he shuts down any possibility of an open and public debate of his record. That's really what he's saying. And we were just not going to have it. And we're not going to have it. We're not going to be a part of closing down the political process. It doesn't matter who's doing it, the Republicans or the Democrats. We're not going to have our voices silenced by a bunch of bullies. And that's really what this has come down to. And that's what this event was all about. And I think it really shook up I know it shook up the Lamar folks, and I'm pretty darn sure it shook up the Republican establishment. They know we're not going to sit by and let this happen. We're going to raise our voices. We're going to tell people this is not a conservative, and he shouldn't be representing Tennessee as a conservative.
Well, you've got that right. And I tell you, you know, it doesn't surprise me that Lamar did that he came out early and tried to avoid being challenged. But what really disappoints me and irritates me are all the people, whether you're talking U.S. reps or state reps, who claim to be conservative, and many of them are. I'm not saying that they haven't voted conservative, but it seemed to me that they kind of, you know, set aside their principles, I guess, for party. It's either for party or... It was either a party or a promise of future funding for their own campaigns. I can't imagine any other reason to help Lamar. I mean, like you say, he didn't even have a challenger. I'm really a little more disappointed in them than him. That's kind of what I expect out of him. But I'm disappointed in the others that didn't have to come out and endorse him but did.
Yeah, I agree completely. And that really is – that's the very definition of the problem of what's wrong with politics. And we saw it early on with Lamar Alexander. One of the first instances I had or that I saw with Lamar Alexander was 10 years ago when we were fighting the income tax. And Lamar Alexander, at that point, this was before he ran for Senate in 2002, Lamar Alexander was good friends with Don Sundquist, who was governor who proposed the state income tax. Tennessee, of course, is one of the states that does not have an income tax, and it really is a part of our identity. We don't have this state income tax, and it means we have lower taxes and smaller government because of that. And it really is a part of what Tennessee is all about and what conservative Tennessee is all about. But here comes this conservative governor, Don Sundquist, and he starts pushing the state income tax. And, of course, it set off about a two-year period there where we were protesting at the state capitol almost every week. And in a state where typically the income tax polls about 80% opposition, in other words, 80% of the people, if they're asked straight up, "Do you want an income tax, state income tax?" they will say, "Hell no, we don't want a state income tax." But within a state where there's that strong an opposition to a state income tax, we came within 5 votes in a 99-seat House of Representatives of passing the state income tax. And so it was all hands on deck. We were all fighting this state income tax because Governor Sundquist had allied with the Democratic Speaker, Jimmy Nafee, and they had come together, and we almost got an income tax passed. Now, the problem with the whole battle was that people like Lamar Alexander, who had tremendous amount of political capital, could have stepped forward and said,
and they didn't.
I'm opposed to this state. And he didn't.
Yeah,
he did
yeah.
not. He
Ben, I hate to jump in, but I've got to take another break here real quick. Let's assume that if you're listening to ConservativeNationRadio.org, you're a conservative. You love America and our Constitution just like we do. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from books to bumper stickers and patriotic T-shirts to flags. And your pipeline to that good stuff is right here at ConservativeNationRadio.org. Just go to our website, ConservativeNationRadio.org, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative revolution needs. Wave your flag proudly and display your love for America and the conservative revolution starting right now. Just go to conservativenationradio.org and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution. Real conservatism for real conservatives.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift. But maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're on the line with Ben Cunningham talking about the Beat Lamar rally this past Saturday. And, Ben, we've got another caller on the line. We're going to take a call real quick. Hopefully it's somebody from the rally last week. Who do we have on the line there? 931-223. Oh, well, I guess they got cold feet. All right. back to you, Ben.
Well, Dave, the point I was trying to make was that 10 years ago, Lamar Alexander had a decision to make. And his decision was, Is my loyalty to Don Sundquist more important, or is the future of Tennessee more important? And Lamar Alexander chose his loyalty and his friendship to Don Sundquist. That was what was most important to him. He would have sat on his behind and let the state income tax go through without him raising a finger if it had come to that. So that was his decision. And the Republicans in Tennessee are basically making the same kind of calculus today. They're basically saying, is my loyalty to and friendship and the money that I get from Lamar Alexander, is that more important, or is the future of the United States of America more important? And they're basically saying my loyalty and my friendship and the money that I get from Lamar Alexander is more important than the future of this country. And that's really what it comes down to. And that's as you were talking about before, that's what really makes me angry. And it's hopefully we can point this out and we'll have. Well, we already had a few people kind of peeling away from Lamar, and I think we'll probably have a whole lot more as we decide on a candidate and the momentum builds.
Oh, I believe, like I said, a decent – go ahead.
I just started to say we've seen the role model. We've seen the Ted Cruz and the Rand Paul and the Mike Lee. We know what it looks like when somebody's willing to fight for the people who elected them. And we're not going back. We're not going back to a mushy moderate like Lamar Alexander, who talks one way in Washington, D.C., and then turns around and votes completely differently. Talks in Tennessee one way and then goes to D.C. and votes another way.
Yeah. Well, Ben, I've only got a couple minutes left, but I got another question for you. Do we need to think about our nomination process? Do we need to do something different in Tennessee? I mean, you know, Tennessee is one of the reddest of red states. Yet we got Lamar Alexander, we got Bob Corker, we got Bill Haslam. I mean, you know, we've got like a monopoly on rhinos. Do we need to do something different as far as the whole nominating process, or, you know, do the primaries need to be closed? I mean, there's a concept. Just throwing it out there.
There's a concept. That's certainly something. And, of course, they tried to do that last year, but all the rhinos in the state executive committee stopped it. That's certainly something that would improve the process. But also, Frank Nicely has proposed an interesting bill in the Senate where he's proposing that the Republican caucus choose the Republican nominee and the Democratic caucus choose the Democratic nominee. I haven't studied that enough personally to have an opinion on it, but it is a very interesting concept, and Alexander and Corker both came out strongly against it, so that in and of itself commends the idea to me. But I like to say, I haven't really considered it enough myself, but I think you're right. I think there's some structural changes that we need to think about making.
Yeah, something's not right, that's for sure. Hey, Ben, thank you for being with us. We hope to have you back. I'd like to get either you or somebody from this Beat Lamar movement. I'm trying to have you every week to kind of give us a little update. And, you know, especially when we have a candidate, definitely want to get you on and get them on. But thanks for being with us, and hope to have you back.
Dave, thanks so much. Great to be on with you.
Thank you. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio with Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Our next guest is Kathy Henners, and Kathy is an expert on, I guess you could say, all things having to do with the Islamic infiltration of our state. Kathy, you with us?
Yes, sir, I am. How are you, Dave?
Doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Appreciate you coming on. I was talking earlier when we opened up the show about a lot of the things that we see going on across our country. You know, the Obama administration has appointed people that are known Muslim Brotherhood operatives to the Department of Homeland Security. There was actually a Supreme Court case a couple of years ago where AIG was heavily involved in Sharia-compliant finance, and there's other examples you hear in the schools and other institutions. So, but we've got that going on in Tennessee, and I'm going to hand the ball over to you on that and let you get started on what you can fill us in on in reference to that.
Okay, sure. And as you first said, how the Obama administration has brought in Muslim Brotherhood people into the White House, it is really bad. I can tell you that there currently is probably between 10 and 12 members, known members of the Muslim Brotherhood within the White House. With the majority of them being under Homeland Security, under Janet Napolitano, who I guess is not going to be there much longer anyway. And that eventually trickles down to how, you know, the states are run. And Haslam certainly has surrounded himself with the same issues. Whether he believes them to be Muslim Brotherhood or not, they are truly affiliates. And one of the groups that we speak about all the time here is called AMAC, or the American Muslim Advisory Council. They are very active here in Tennessee. They were kind of modeled after similar organizations throughout the country, the largest one being in Chicago, Illinois area. But our very own AMAC has a myriad of Muslim Brotherhood members in it, including Selah Spinetti, who's from Murfreesboro, who is a professor at MTSU. But AMAC was born around the time that the anti-terrorism support bill was being drafted and voted on, and they became very active at that time. And what's really kind of sad is that the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security actually partnered with AMAC for law enforcement training, which I personally am extremely worried about and offended by, being that I am a law enforcement instructor as well. So AMAC is a very dangerous organization. They've gotten through to law enforcement, the instructing in law enforcement. They consider themselves a bridge between the government, the Muslim community, and law enforcement. And what's kind of funny is that the commissioner of the Department of Safety and Homeland Security, Bill Gibbons, had actually sent a letter to them opening with their greeting, Assalamu Alaikum, thanking them and congratulating them on being partners with this government, which I find really amazing that we're thanking the Muslim Brotherhood for being here. But they are truly an organization that has its arms into everything throughout the state. So that's one of the organizations that we like to talk about.
Let's talk about that just a little bit with the AMAC. Now, you mentioned that they kind of came into being at the same time the material support bill, which was an anti-terrorism measure. Now, this bill was not directed at Muslims. It was directed at anybody who was supporting terrorism in any way, shape, or form for whatever the reason. Yet, that's when they came into being, and I think they had a forerunner organization. But the DHS was involved early on, weren't they, with the people that were protesting or this group that was against the material support bill?
Yeah, they started out as the Muslim Rapid Response Team. Kind of sounds SWAT-ish in my world, but not quite sure what that meant. But then they kind of morphed into AMAC, and then they kind of again morphed into what's the lobbying arm, which is called the American Center for Outreach, which we could do at a whole nother show on just them and their players, which I hope to be able to do. But, yeah, and what's silly was that it wasn't an anti-Muslim bill, and you'll hear their members when they speak, you know, talk about this anti-Muslim bill and how they would be arrested for, you know, doing their own Sharia law within their own communities. And that wasn't so, you know. And you would think that any American would be right on board with any anti-terrorism support bill. But, you know, they were there with CARE, which is a Hamas, I call it the mini Hamas organization. So Homeland Security has kind of grabbed them right from the very beginning, probably to appease them, I would imagine, in part. But, you know, they have formed this alliance. And I don't have to tell you about Samar Ali, who also this governor has brought into the fray, if you will, as far as Sharia financing goes. So he's done a lot of things that are questionable, and why we need to be embracing this particular community is beyond me at this point. But the things that are happening within our state, and a lot of people, I just wrote a post on this, and a lot of people haven't heard about this.
Kathy, I hate to stop you, but I've got to take a real quick 30-second break,
okay,
and we'll be right back to you.
Okay.
The leftist media would like conservatives like us to think we're just a few lonely voices in the wilderness, but don't be fooled. Americans that identify themselves as conservatives outnumber liberals by 2-1, according to numerous polls, even by liberals. If you respect traditional American values, there's a place for you to call home on the Internet. It's traditionalamericanmovement.com, or TradM, as we call our home. TraditionalAmericanMovement.com is the place where real conservatives can meet up without turf wars and find out what's new in the conservative community. Join up, find out what's happening, and be part of the conservative revolution, all on TraditionalAmericanMovement.com. That's www.TraditionalAmericanMovement.com. I hope to see you there soon. TradAm is a liberal-free website, which makes it a great website. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. Inside Tennessee is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. And we're speaking to Kathy Henners about the Islamist infiltration of Tennessee. And back to you, Kathy.
Yeah, I think one of the most disturbing things that just happened over the weekend, which we all kind of caught, was our own Nashville WMSV Channel 4 News anchor Jonathan Martin has left his six-year tenure here to join Al Jazeera TV, which will be launching here in Nashville on August 20th.
Al Jazeera in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah, and, you know, they won't be playing country music, I'm sure. But there again, you know, we have another de facto Muslim Brotherhood organization that is sweeping the country. They're in all the large cities. They've picked Nashville again. But we have a local reporter who was, you know, embracing the Nashville community, very involved in, like, the Country Music Fest and doing all community-oriented things. And then all of a sudden you read that he's, boom, going to Al Jazeera. And I guess money, you know, is the root of all evil. And so I think that was one of the big things that happened over the weekend with the Islamic influence here in our great area.
So
another
we
thing that
you know who the sponsors are. Who are the sponsors? Who in Nashville is willing to sponsor Al Jazeera? Because people need to know. That's insane. And those sponsors need to hear from everybody.
Absolutely.
So we don't know who's sponsoring them.
Not yet. I'll be posting that information hopefully by the end of the week. We do have who nationwide has pulled out of sponsoring them, and it's a very long list. So I will be posting those names and how to go about reaching sponsors to tell them that you don't want this, because that really is the only way to get them on one hand. But on the other hand, Al Jazeera is funded by oil-rich nations, and they are like care. They are bottomless pits of money. So they may not need the sponsorships here in this country. I'm not sure. We're still trying to work, you know, figure that all out. But certainly there are a lot of large companies that have pulled out. So hopefully we can squash that here in Nashville, because really it's giving a great forum and a great platform to a lot of our local wannabe famous type Islamists. So, you know, that's a little dangerous. But that was the one
Very
thing that
so.
I wanted to point out. Yeah. And then you and I had spoke about a memo that came out of St. Thomas's Hospital. And actually, I think in part it's been maybe twisted out of proportion a little bit, because you did tell me that, you know, they do this for other religions as well. But it was disturbing at first to hear that they issued a memo, St. Thomas, the new St. Thomas Hospital West, if you will, regarding the month of Ramadan and the special accommodations needed during this holy month. And I guess my first thought was, well, do the Christians and the Jews get this during their holy months or holy weeks or whatever? But I guess we've kind of straightened that out, and that they do. Other religions apparently do. And I would like to see those memos as well for the Christians and the Jews.
Yeah.
So we won't rag too much on St. Thomas Hospital tonight, but
yeah.
Just another local flair. Mm-hmm.
Right. I will say something on that, though. I mean, okay, they were explaining in this email, they explained the whole history and reason behind Ramadan. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and they were talking about Ramadan as, you know, they're celebrating that, you know, that the Quran was revealed to Muhammad. So I'm thinking, okay, here you have a Catholic organization, or at least at some point in time was a Catholic organization,
mm-hmm.
and they don't seem to have, apparently they've never read what's in the Quran. Apparently they've never read the writings, because I think if they knew what was in there, and I'm certainly if the other people who attended, who visit that hospital knew what was in there, they might still be a little bit concerned about them setting aside space for that, because that's what the celebration is about. The celebration about the Quran and the revealing of it to Muhammad, according to the memo they put out. Hey, I hate to do it, but I'm going to have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Kathy Henders on Inside Tennessee. Thanks.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict. The war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to tn4action.com. That's TN, the number 4, action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN4Action.com to stand for America Now.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. Inside Tennessee is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council, www.tn4action.com. I'm Dave Vance, your host. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are on the line with Kathy Henners from the Daily Roll Call blog, and she is just informing us on all the infiltration going on in our state. I was going to say all the great things, but these are not great things. Unfortunately, it's not just in D.C., and Tennessee seems to, in terms of our leaders, you know, we start off talking about the partnership, the AMAC partnership with our DHS, Bill Gibbons. And you know, I know that last year there were resolutions about that and things were sent to the Haslam administration, and they pretty much just blew it off. All in all, they just pretty much blew it off. And, you know, I don't think that this is a relationship, a partnership that the people in Tennessee, just like the people in Tennessee, should not tolerate having Alexander as their senator anymore. I don't think we should tolerate having our state government have a partnership with AMAC, a known Muslim Brotherhood organization.
And until they understand that there is this relationship, I don't know if it's, you know, the being naive that they just don't know or if they truly just don't care. But I also know that Mr. Haslam has his hand in the Common Core curriculum, kind of in a roundabout way. One of the organizations that he funds with other governors is very big in the Islamist-type education, and there is that Muslim influence into the Common Core. And that, again, that's, I guess I'm just setting up all these shows down the road, Dave.
You are.
you know, well, that's another thing, the Islamic influence in Common Core, which, you know, Common Core on the face of it is bad enough, but when you hear who underwrites the books and things like that, that's also another issue. So I don't know if it's being naive on the part of the administration that they just don't know. But they need to listen, and I think the only way that we can truly start making change in this state is to get rid of, like you were talking before about Lamar, is just to get rid of them, to vote them out, say this is unacceptable, regardless of, you know, who they are, Republican or Democrat. I don't even think it matters at this point. It's what they believe and what they know about the Sharia law and about the Islamists that are storming into this state, which I had no idea about all of this before I moved here. But another thing, if we have
so
another
much
minute.
Retirement, huh?
Yeah,
so
really.
Much for retirement?
I'm like, where is there a peaceful place in this country? And I'm not sure that I can find one that is Islamist free. Let me know if you do. I think one of the other things that I wanted to touch on, and this goes for our airport, as well as every other airport right now, TSA actually came out with a guide to us CAFORs to understand
what's happening. Let me hold you up there now. Let me hold you up right there. You might want to explain the term CAFR to some of our listeners out there that may not be familiar with it.
All right. CAFR or CAFOR is a non-believer, basically looked down upon by a Muslim as a non-believer. So we are an infidel, and the majority of us are infidels or non-believers or kafirs, as kafirs, as Dr. Bill likes to call them. And we are looked down as a second-class citizen, actually. So, you know, there's a whole other social class that's formed as a kafir. But we are that. And so TSA has come out with a guide for us poor folks that are non-believers, apparently, as to what to look for in the airport and to understand when you see a group of Muslims in an airport that it's okay, even if they're speaking in Arabic and whatnot, not to be alarmed because there will be large groups, because this is the month of the Hajj, which is basically where those that are able go to Mecca. So they travel in the airports in large numbers throughout this month to make the Hajj. So, you know, they've come up with this guideline, that it's okay to see large groups of Muslims speaking in their native tongue and whatever else, which I found was really odd. I'd seen a picture somewhere of a group that was praying in front of the elevator in a hotel, and I thought that was rather interesting because they're going to make you see what they do, regardless of whether you don't want to or not. They're going to be very bold about how they pray and where they pray. And I just think it's interesting because, you know, it is being thrust upon us whether we want it to or not. So, but just be mindful when you're going through the airports. You know, TSA is giving special concessions throughout the airports to these folks at this time. Which
so I guess equal protection is equal protection is officially dead then. Is that pretty much the case?
Yeah. I'm thinking about throwing my burqa on one of these days and trying to go through the airport. So, you know, if you hear I got arrested, Dave, help me out with that, would you? But, you know, just to see what the special treatments are, you know. I mean, if I say, oh, you can't touch me because I'm in this burqa, I wonder what they're going to do. So, but we've had our problems here in Tennessee. You know, and back to AMAC, we've had some training done. The Rutherford County Schools, who actually I haven't hammered on in a while, they had Arab diversity training, which was back in May of 2011, and that was all under the guise of the culture, but you have to understand that the culture is the religion. So
yeah, there's no separation of anything there.
No. And until people understand that, it's a very dangerous thing to bring groups in to train our teachers and our administrators, you know, that they don't need to necessarily have this in-depth training. They don't have anyone else's culture or, you know, religious training. So I guess what it all comes down to is an equal playing field for everyone. And if you're going to invite one group in, you need to invite other groups. And Rutherford County, though, they're doing really good work over there.
Well, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. Is that mostly a metro deal? Is it mostly the metropolitan areas in Tennessee in terms of accommodating them in the schoolrooms, in the schoolhouse?
No. I would say, well, let's talk about Bedford County for a second, which is not a metro area. That is where Shelbyville is. And the highest population of Somalis in this state are in Shelbyville. And, you know, we've pretty much reached out. We've done public records requests throughout a lot of different school districts, large and small. A lot of the smaller ones are saying, no, they don't have this problem. But we're going to begin another cycle of doing this because we know that CARE has come to Maury County. They've reached out to school different school districts around the state, the smaller school districts, so we do know that they are at least asking to come in, whether or not they've been in, but we know that they're asking to. So Bedford County came back with, no, we don't have any of this training, but we're going to try that again because you can't have that population and not have some sort of group come in and say, yeah, you need to be trained. So, no, it's out there in all the small areas. We just haven't found it yet, but we will. Rutherford County. Go ahead.
You mentioned Common Core a little while ago, and of course, you mentioned there's a certain amount of Islamic infiltration into that. And of course, Texas and California are two of the biggest states, and a lot of the textbooks are modeled after what comes out of Texas and out of California. And we know that there's been a lot of Islamic infiltration there. So even mm-hmm. if they don't have a special program, you probably still have, to some degree, in all the schools in our state and probably in the country, a certain degree of Islamic propaganda in the school books, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. And Pearson books is one of the biggest problem areas. I believe, I don't remember the percentage, but Libya actually has stock in Pearson school books. A fairly large amount of stock. So you can only imagine the things that those school books. So I would say Pearson and Holt, and there was a third, I just can't remember what it is, but they are all probably, I guess Pearson would be the worst. They have the majority of writers of school books and textbooks are of Muslim faith. One in particular, Susan Douglas, who's a revert, if you will, from Virginia, who's got her hands in Pearson textbooks, and she writes a lot of, actually a lot of the textbook information. So, you know, we have to look at the textbooks, but what's interesting about Common Core, from what I understand, is that textbooks would be no more, so that your children will not be bringing home those books for you to peruse through to look to see if there is any propaganda in them. It will be, you know, maintained within the school system and on computers. So, you know, in doing away with textbooks, I think that's really dangerous. But
Because you have no way of knowing then what they're being taught.
No, and as we speak, in Spring Hill right now, a woman by the name of Cynthia Dunbar is speaking over at the People's Church regarding C-SCOPE and Common Core. C-SCOPE was the program in Texas, and Texas has pretty much defeated Common Core and C-SCOPE. They've booted them out. They're one of the, I think there's 14 states that have said no to the federal funding and to get out of our state. And I think Tennessee, we've got some great people working on that as well. So I hope that it gets the boot here, too. If you've got kids in school, you need to pay attention.
I hate to cut you off, but we're up against a hard break. I appreciate you coming on. I'll definitely have you back.
Okay.
Any number of topics that you're competent to talk about. So thanks
great.
Again, and I look forward to having you back. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Hey, Dad, how do you throw a curveball? How do you build a fort? How do refrigerators run? How do fish learn how to swim?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
How high can you jump?
But you don't have to know every answer.
How many phone numbers are there?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
How do cell phones work?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
What's electricity?
They just need you.
What's the moon made of?
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. The phone number is 718-305-7176. I'm your host, Dave Vance. This show is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. WWTN, the number 4, action.com. Our next guest is Richard Archie. And Richard Archie is involved with the Tennessee Firearms Association in Tennessee. Very knowledgeable on the Tennessee Constitution, especially as it concerns gun rights, legislation in Tennessee, and just a wealth of information on all things firearms related and really rights related, because that's where his focus is. Richard, are you with us?
I am.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Yeah, I got you. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Appreciate you coming on. A lot going on these days, and wanted to talk to you a little bit. And you know, I've heard you speak several times, not just on the gun issue, but on the Tennessee Constitution, and I doubt there's anybody that knows it any better than you. So why don't we start there a little bit and give people a little history that most of them probably do not have on the Tennessee Constitution, especially as it relates to firearms.
Well, you know, I think that's very imperative that we go back and take a look at that, because what we have today in our Constitution is decidedly different from what we started out with. The original Tennessee Constitution, written in 1796, when it comes to the issue of firearms, said at that point under Article 1, Section 26, that the free men of this state have a right to keep and to bear arms for their common defense. That was all that it said. There wasn't anything about the legislature having any power to do anything with it. That got changed in 1834. It was amended to say, then in Article 1, Section 26, that the free white men of this state have a right to keep and bear arms for their common defense. So basically what they did was they changed up and they took away the rights of people who weren't white in the state of Tennessee at that point in 1834 and required only white people could bear arms in the state of Tennessee. After the Civil War in 1870, the Tennessee Constitution was rewritten again, and it was amended one more time to remove the white man restriction. The legislature at that time added a provision regarding the legislature's power to regulate the wearing of arms. The regulatory clause can be viewed as either a grant of power or a restriction on the power of the legislature, depending on how you look at it. I see it as a restriction. Most of the legislators see that as a grant of power on their part. But what it changed to in 1870 is now Article 1, Section 26 says that the citizens of this state have a right to keep and to bear arms for their common defense, but the legislature shall have power by law to regulate the wearing of arms with a view to prevent crime. And so now basically what the legislature has given himself, and it was never intended by the founders. You heard me read the original Article 1, Section 26, and the restrictions that were placed on the legislature. Basically, they didn't have any right whatsoever to tell the average citizen who was a non-criminal that he couldn't carry his arms wherever he needed to in the state of Tennessee. That has totally changed now. In 1870, they gave themselves the right. Now, of course, this was ratified by the voters in the state of Tennessee after they got it ready to present back to the Union government so that we'd be allowed back into the Union after the Civil War. But you need to
maybe a little coercion there? Just
yeah,
a little coercion
a little
there?
Yeah. And the thing is that if they wrote this, basically you have to understand that the people that were in power in Tennessee at that time were still Democrats. And so what they did was they put that in. The reason they inserted that language into our Constitution was to make sure that free black slaves did not have the ability to bear arms. They wanted to be sure that they were able to keep them where they wanted them, and the whole intent and purpose of having it the way they have it now in our Constitution was to make sure that freed slaves could not keep and bear arms for their common defense. And it was one of the Jim Crow laws, and that law is still on the books. It's done a little differently today, but by the same token, you know, it is laid on the legislatures themselves to be sure that any bill, any law, any restriction that they place on the ability of a legal owner of a firearm in the state of Tennessee has to be done with a view to prevent crime. That's the way it's actually written. And if a law in the state of Tennessee does not in fact address reducing crime and it deals with the firearm restriction, then it's unconstitutional. And what I see time and time again is the legislators up there now feel like they have the ability and the power and the strength to tell us what we can and cannot do with our firearms here in the state of Tennessee. And it's kind of gone in reverse to what the Constitution intended. In fact, we've had two different cases that went before the Supreme Court in the state of Tennessee, and the one that really has bearing on this whole issue is Andrews v. State. And what that was, there was a gentleman up in Gibson County, Tennessee, and at that time you had the intent to go armed clause inserted into the Tennessee Code annotated. And basically what it says is that no person can walk outside their home with a loaded firearm in the state of Tennessee, that that's the intent to go armed, and that's illegal. It's a criminal offense. And
well, now,
can you
hold up just a second here, just so I'm straight
sure.
Now? Because a minute ago, you said that they had the ability to restrict with an eye towards reducing crime.
Right.
Was that just basically gave them carte blanche? Did they have anything that laid out, okay, reducing crime, meaning, okay, you're a convicted felon, you're mentally unstable, whatever, or was it just pretty much, was it that vague? Because now you're telling me that they're saying you can't even carry one.
No, that's correct. It is that vague, and what they did was they gave themselves, you have to understand that the legislators got together when they rewrote the Constitution in 1870, decided upon the power that they wanted to have. And so therefore, it is every bit that vague. And, of course, the way it has to occur, you've got to, when you put one of these laws out, one of these TCA codes, it has to go back to the courts to be rectified to make sure that it is, in fact, constitutional. And so they rewrote the Constitution in 1870, and it only took to 1871 for it to be tried. And the gentleman up there in Gibson County put his pistol in his pocket, and someone had threatened his life, basically. And so he put his pistol in his pocket and said, you know, I'm really a Tennessean. I've got a right, if I read the Constitution correctly, to keep and bear arms for my defense. And someone else found out that he was, in fact, carrying the weapon, and they called the sheriff. And at that time, the sheriffs in Tennessee were able, under a statute type called May Issue, they could, in fact, give permits to people to carry weapons if they were their friends. And what we have now is called a shall issue. We have criteria that says if you meet the criteria, the sheriff of your county cannot keep you from having that permit. But at that point, basically what it boiled down to is a little feudal system, and as we call it in Tennessee, a good old boy situation, where if your buddy was a sheriff, he'd go ahead and give you a permit, and if you weren't with the in crowd, you could not get it. So this individual was going about armed in the state of Tennessee. The sheriff arrested him and said, here's the TCA code, says that you can't go around with a loaded gun. And he said, but I can because the Constitution says I can. And they found him guilty in Gibson County. He appealed it to the appellate court. They found him guilty. And he was evidently well-heeled enough that he went ahead and appealed it to the Tennessee Supreme Court. And when he got there, the Supreme Court said, you're right. And the Tennessee Supreme Court has recognized that the General Assembly has the authority under that section of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 26, to enact legislation to regulate the wearing and carrying of arms in public. And it's really important, Dave, that we look at this here. The legislature does not have the power to regulate the keeping of arms. And that will be real important down the road when we talk about another situation, the parking lot bill that I want to get to in a little while. What the legislature has the power to regulate is the bearing or wearing of arms, and that's all. So,
Richard, I'm going to have to hold you up here real quick. I've got to do a real quick read, and then we'll get right back to you. Okay. Don't let the big liberal media fool you or anyone else. There's no war on women in the conservative movement, and we've got the proof right here every Tuesday night. Women Patriots with Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing comes to you at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, here on conservativenationradio.org. Listen up and call in and be heard by real women who are real patriots. Incidentally, conservative guys are welcome at our very own B&B, too. Women Patriots with Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. By the way, just so everybody knows that the conservativenationradio.org is now fully optimized for smartphones such as Android, iPhones, and others. So you can download our podcast or listen to us live wherever you are and whenever you want. Same great show, same great people, now fully optimized for your smartphone. Real conservatism for real conservatives. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking to Richard Archie from the Tennessee Firearms Association. Richard, you know, with everything going on, you know, you've got the situation with ammo, with the weapons. You had the massacre last December, the Newtown massacre. You've had the federal government pushing. Now you've got the Trayvon Martin Zimmerman trial, and it seems that the Department of Justice has suggested that they want to look at the Stand Your Ground laws. We do have something similar to that. I know we have a Castle Doctrine in Tennessee. What are the odds that the people in Tennessee are going to face a challenge by the federal government on their Stand Your Ground laws that we have?
Well, the federal government doesn't have the power, as far as I'm concerned. And I think we'll find that most
Richard, I can barely hear you. I don't know if you're in a bad spot. And you're...
Is that a little better?
Very, very little.
I don't know what's happening. I'm I'm on my cell phone. I'll tell you, are you getting me any clearer now?
No, not any better.
Sometimes it's better if I move in the spot.
There you are.
And, okay. What you're going to find right now, the federal government doesn't have the power to involve theirself through the 10th Amendment with what a state requires as far as...
Are you there? Hello?
Yeah. It's a better day. Hello?
Just a little. Hello?
Well, I don't know what's happening here. I guess the powers have decided to move. You want me to call back in on my landline? That may work better.
Yeah, let's try that. I need to go to a break anyway.
Okay.
That'll work. Well, you call back right on your landline.
Go to break and I'll call. All right.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot. We'll be right back with Richard Archie.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then,
hey!
The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. Tennessee Action Council is the sponsor of this program. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we were talking with Richard Archie. I think we have him back on his landline. Hopefully a little better reception. Richard, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me a little better now?
Much better, much better. Thanks for calling back.
Okay,
we were talking about the stand your ground and the federal government trying to involve themselves. Now, we know that they don't technically have the right, but
that's
nothing
correct.
About, you know, as far as having the legal right, that hasn't seemed to stop this administration on a lot of things. But how do you see things playing out? What do you think might happen on this issue over the next couple of months?
Well, here's what I think they're going to attempt to do. They're going to try, and really what I see is they're trying to make a show, basically, for a certain constituency, and I think that has to do with the very liberal personification or what people want to see from a liberal side. They're going to try to stand up and say, well, we really think that this needs to happen. I was very disheartened when I saw that John McCain said, I think we need to have a conversation about standard ground laws. But again, what it boils down to are these are things that are left to the states. The federal government doesn't have the power to involve themselves with that on a state-by-state basis. Currently, 33 states in the union right now have a form of stand your ground law, whether that's the Castle Doctrine or a specific stand your ground statute. And only 17 states have what we call a requirement to retreat. And really, that's all there is there. The thing about the George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin case is it didn't involve stand your ground at all. Anybody who will take the time to look at the testimony and trials and to see what Zimmerman's defense team used, they could have requested a stand your ground hearing in the state of Florida. That would have taken place in front of a judge only. There wouldn't have been a jury whatsoever. However, at that point, what would have been endemic on their defense team was to prove to the state that, in fact, Zimmerman was correct in what he did. What they asked to do was to defend him under a self-defense clause, and that's a totally separate law in Florida. And so that's what they did. That gave them a jury trial, and the state then was under the burden to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt or any reasonableness to the jury, that, in fact, he intended to murder him, and it was required then that the state put the evidence on. They didn't do that. They had the opportunity. They had a six-month window to have the FBI come down and do a total look at everything he had done his entire life prior to that, and there just wasn't any evidence whatsoever. And I'm real concerned right now that this show trial that they have there, and now everybody starts standing up, and talking about we've got to do something about the Stand Your Ground laws. In fact, I saw where the caucus in Tennessee was talking about the fact that we had to really look at the Stand Your Ground law in Tennessee. Well, that falls under what we call the Castle Doctrine here. And the TCA code for that is 3911611, and it's called self-defense.
And which caucus? Which caucus, Richard, was talking about that?
It was the Black Caucus. The Black Caucus in the state of Tennessee said that we needed to do a look at that. And again, I think what they're doing is they're kind of pandering a little bit to their constituents. And I understand from their perspective, I mean, everything that you're hearing right now is talking about there wasn't any justice done. Well, there was justice done. They had an opportunity to put the trial on, to put all the evidence on, and a jury found that he was not guilty of second-degree murder or manslaughter. But now what they've done is they've moved off of that, and what they're trying to do is say, well, it's the Stand Your Ground law that was responsible for this. You saw Eric Holder the other day talking about this time-honored position of needing to retreat. You know, I have looked hard since I heard him speak there. I haven't been able to find that. You know, you go back to the original founders, I never heard George Washington talking about a need to retreat.
Time-honored need to retreat?
That is correct. That's exactly what he said in his speech that he gave in Florida the other day. And he talks about this talk that he had with his son. He said, I was hoping that I wouldn't have to have the same conversation with my son that my father had with me. And I thought to myself, the conversation that an individual needs to have, if you live in a state that has a self-defense statute, what you need to tell your teenage son is when you're out in the dark, walking in a spot where you may be accosted or questioned by an adult, if that adult asks you a question, you don't walk up to him and pop him in the nose. Because if you live in a state where it's legal for that man to be armed outside of his home, you may not like the results of that. And so the conversation you need to have with your son is be respectful to your elders. You know, a 17-year-old individual that's going to jump on a full-grown man and try to beat him because he perceived that he was being followed and somehow that disrespected him. You know, I've my whole life attempted to walk away from situations where I felt it may be injurious to my health. It's a lot smarter to back up and, you know, why didn't he just go on to his house while he had the opportunity? And so there are a lot of questions there. But the whole point of the matter is that we have a right under Tennessee law, and it's real specific. It says, notwithstanding 39.17.13.22, a person who is not engaged in unlawful activity and is in a place where the person has a right to be has no duty to retreat before threatening or using force against another person when and to the degree the person reasonably believes the force is immediately necessary to protect against the other's use or attempted use of unlawful force. Now, that's pretty clear. You know,
now, is that the Castle Doctrine or is that something
that
separate?
Is the Castle. That's what we call in Tennessee the Castle Doctrine. And that statement sits underneath the definitions of where you can do that. And it gives 1 through 5. 1 is a business, which means any place it's a commercial enterprise or establishment owned by a person. Or their curtilage means the area surrounding a dwelling that is necessary, convenient, and habitually used for family purposes. Your front porch, your front yard is your curtilage. A dwelling is the third one, so it means any building or conveyance of any type, including an attached porch, wherever the building or conveyance is temporary or permanent. In other words, a tent is a dwelling in the state of Tennessee, mobile or immobile, that has a roof over it. The fourth one is a residence, means a dwelling in which a person resides. And the fifth one is your vehicle, means any motorized vehicle that is self-propelled and designed for use on public highways. So those are the different locations in the state of Tennessee where if you're there and you're not breaking the law, if you have a right to be there, that then if you reasonably perceive that an individual is trying to severely hurt you or kill you, you have the right to use force as necessary to protect your life. It's just that simple. And, you know, I've never been able to find anything, and I've looked really hard, but there was never an instance in the state of Tennessee where you were required to retreat. And basically what they're saying now, what Holder was saying the other day is, you know, if you're outside your home we'll kind of give you your home. If somebody's in your home and they're bearing down on you, then you can go ahead and use deadly force to protect your life there. But if you're outside that house, if there's an opportunity for you to run away, we expect you to run away.
Well, now, I got a question for you.
Okay.
And actually, it would be a question for the Black Caucus of Tennessee, since they think we need to look at Stand Your Ground law. If you are jumped by anybody, whether it's a teenager or whatever, and they are on top of you, slamming your head against the pavement, exactly where and how do you retreat any further?
You cannot. That's patently obvious at that point that you can't. That's the reason that Zimmerman's lawyers never attempted to use a stand your ground law, because there was absolutely no opportunity for him to retreat. So they didn't ask for that. In the state of Florida, they have two different opportunities like we discussed. You can either do stand your ground or self-defense, and they elected to go with self-defense because stand your ground isn't viable. He couldn't retreat because he was on his back. There was no place for him to go. So, and again, I saw this week several different attorneys in the state of Tennessee, people that I know, and kind of reading on Facebook. I try to stay up with this and see what the pulse of the general population is. And several of the attorneys that consider themselves conservatives are going, well, you know, we really think maybe there's – we ought to look at this opportunity to retreat here. I don't get that. I'm serious. I've seen quite a bit of that. In fact, I've been involved in a couple of real debates, one might say, with individuals who consider themselves much better educated about the law than I am, and I'm not an attorney by any stretch of the imagination. I'm an old construction grunt, but I can read. I passed and graduated the eighth grade and then through high school and got a little bit of college to go with it, and I can read the English language. There's no doubt in my mind what this clause in our TCA code intends, and it says if you're not engaged in an unlawful activity and you're in a place that you've got a right to be, you have no duty to retreat. And it's just that simple. And for anybody to intend to take that away from us, in fact, we never had a situation where it was declared in our TCA code annotated or in our Constitution that we owed a duty to retreat. What they did when they put this in was they codified the fact that, yes, it may be necessary, and really this had to do in your home. You have to understand what this means. If you wake up in your bed and you see an individual standing over you, you don't have to ascertain whether he means you harm or not. You have the presumption at that point that he does. And so, therefore, you're allowed in the state of Tennessee, if you believe imminent death or serious bodily injury is real, then you can take any steps necessary inside your home. And what they looked at and said, well, your vehicle's just like your castle at your house. You know, and it came down to the fact that there were being so many carjackings in the state of Tennessee that they went ahead and codified this thing that said, well, you know, your car is just like your castle at your home. If a man lays hands on you in your car, you don't have to wait to ascertain. Normally, one wouldn't anticipate that if a person grabs you while you're in your car, he means much good for you. But what they did when they passed this bill was they gave you the presumption at that point that individual meant you harm, and what we need to be doing is instructing our youth, telling them what the law is, instead of this, let's have justice for somebody who didn't understand the law. Let's educate everybody so they do understand the law. And I think
how to not get shot guide for our thuggish youth, right?
Well, absolutely, and not just for thuggish youth, but for all youth. You know, across the board, teenage boys don't have a whole lot of sense. You know, and they're full of something and vinegar, as my grandmother used to say. And, you know, they think they're indestructible and they're going to live forever. And I think it's endemic on us to explain to them what the law is. Anymore, we've got a problem in that we don't teach our children the right things. And I heard earlier, I was listening to Bill, and the lady was talking about Common Core and who's writing the new curriculum and the fact that they're not going to send the textbooks home. Parents won't know. What we need to do is demand of our legislators that we instruct our children on what the law is. Let's, you know, they see so much of this noise on television and, you know, all this different fighting type stuff and the games that they play, and they glorify violence and they glorify blood and they glorify the use of firearms for bad purposes. What I think we need to do is to instruct our children, this is what's going to happen. If you play stupid games, you're going to win stupid prizes. And we really yeah. need to instruct our children as to the fact of what the law is. And if you go out here and you attack a full-grown man, and it's in a state where he's got the right to carry a firearm to protect his life, if you go to beating him about the head and shoulders, you may not like the results of that. That's the conversation Eric Holder needs to have with his son. And each of us needs to have it with our children as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little bit concerned that you said several lawyers in Tennessee seem to think we should actually look at this review and this stand your ground law, or look at Holder's suggestion of, retreating. I think we definitely need to keep an eye on it. Hey, we're up against a hard break. We come back, we've got a caller on the line, and then we're going to get into the guns and trunk bill. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. ConservativeNationRadio.org is proud to be associated with the most effective identity, security, and credit monitoring service there is, LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. And now Conservative Nation Radio is proud to announce that when you join LifeLock, you get the first 30 days free and 10% off of a regular price from then on. Only through ConservativeNationRadio.org. To protect your identity with LifeLock, go to ConservativeNationRadio.org and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's ConservativeNationRadio.org and click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad that you did.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. We've got Richard Archie on the line with us from the Tennessee Firearms Association. And we're getting ready to get into the conversation about the parking lot bill that was passed this year. And that's a lot of people were following that bill for a lot of different reasons. We're going to go to a caller real quick. Kurt, you have anything you want to pitch in on this one?
Well, yeah, I got a question, Dave. I want to ask Richard here. I want to hear what he thinks the implications and or repercussions are going to be in this situation where, if I have the information correct, the DOJ has instructed the FBI to impound Zimmerman's gun and not give it back to him, as he was supposed to be scheduled to be able to get his weapon back now that he's been found not guilty of that jury. What do you see coming in that arena, Richard?
Well, basically what it boils down to, if you heard the judge's instructions at the end of the trial, she instructed the court and the bailiffs to release the evidence. They were done with the trial. They had held that for the term necessary. The investigations have been done. And she said that the evidence would be released. I was watching when that occurred. And basically what we've got now is a situation where they've got a tip line out here where Holder said, well, we want everybody to have their shot at Zimmerman, and so therefore we're going to put a number up, and anybody that's got any information whatsoever can call in. We're going to hold this. We're not going to give any of the stuff, any of the evidence back. They basically came and took it all back, and there are more things besides just his gun. But I think that was the intent was to make sure that he didn't get his weapon back. They haven't been able to take his, and in Florida it's called a concealed carry permit. They weren't able to take that away from him because he has not been convicted of a crime. But the federal government can come in under the Department of Justice and say, we're not done looking at this, so we're going to hold this evidence in case we need it. So therefore, they've been able to lay hands on his stuff and take it away from him now. Personally, you know, what the Fourth Amendment says is that you're supposed to be secure from seizure, unreasonable seizure, and I think that's what we've got here because they've already had a six-month term to do all the investigation through the FBI that they could to determine whether there was any racial animus involved in this, and they weren't able to find any. So, you know, it's basically what this is just strong-arming the situation and making sure, again, that they're playing to a certain base out there to say, we're not going to give that man that gun back. And, you know, personally, I think it's an illegal act, but they didn't ask me what I thought.
Okay. Okay, you said he still holds his Florida concealed carry permit, though, right?
That is correct. They weren't able to strip that from him because he hadn't done anything to have it taken away.
Is there anything to prevent him, then, from obtaining another firearm other than the one that they are still holding as evidence?
No, sir. There isn't from doing that.
Well, I think that
so it's just the one that he used.
Personal.
That's correct. In other words, what they've done is place a hold on the evidence that. But, you know, if in fact, I've seen several different sites. Buckeye Firearms, I believe, is a organization in Ohio that's very similar to the TFA in Tennessee. And so they're taking up donations right now to make sure they've got enough money to go back down and rearm Mr. Zimmerman. I've heard of several different people who have said, you know, they'd be willing to donate weapons to him. So I have a feeling that very shortly he's going to be able to be armed again. It's just the simple fact that the judge ordered that evidence released back to its rightful owners, and the Department of Justice has stepped in and inserted themselves into a state issue once again.
Yeah.
Yes.
Surprise, surprise. Hey, Kurt, thanks for the call.
Oh,
I got
really?
A couple other callers
okay.
I want to get to.
Okay, go. Go ahead.
And who do we have here?
Yes, I'm a 16-year-old, and I just joined the. I just started listening, but I guess you guys were talking about someone getting their gun taken away for reasons unknown. But I was wondering, where's Hang on. Sorry, I'm looking at something. Someone's outside. But I was listening to your communist radio and. You know, they're talking about how, like, they should take all the guns away. And, you know, I agree with them because people can't have guns. We're not responsible enough. So.
Oh, well, you may not be, but the rest of us are. Thank you.
Problem solved.
Caller, you have a question?
Well, this is Michael. I was just calling in to listen. This is David. It's Michael from Texas. Duke would kill me for calling in. I was just calling in to listen. But, you know, who can resist that last caller? The Second Amendment. Yeah, exactly. The Second Amendment gives me a right. It's not a matter of needs. It's a matter of God-given rights. But just put me on mute. I just want to listen to your show today, bro.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot. I think you got a little leeway since you are the owner. All right. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. The phone number is 718-305-7176. I'm your host, Dave Vance, and we're talking to Richard Archie from the Tennessee Firearms Association. Richard, the parking lot bill. You've been involved with that since day one. Let's talk about that a little bit.
We've been working this thing for a lot of years. You know, right now there are 20 other states in the union that have this law, and basically all that we've ever asked, we called it the Safe Commute when we first penned it and tried to carry it through the state of Tennessee, and the intention for the law is to allow the lawful legal gun owner in the state of Tennessee to keep their weapon in their vehicle so that they have it available for their protection to and from their home to work. And that's the reason we called it the Safe Commute Law. You have lots of derisive different names for it, the guns and trunks. all this kind of stuff where people try to, you know, be waggish about the situation, try to name it something that it's not. But basically what it boils down to is our full intent with this was to be able to provide for an individual, and under the law in the state of Tennessee right now, if you have your handgun carry permit, that you be able to leave that weapon locked up, secured in your vehicle while you go into work. We never intimated that an individual would be able to carry inside their place of work. You heard that. People trying to say, oh, no, no, you can't be carrying a weapon into your place of work. We never intended that. That's not the way the bill was written. So basically all it boiled down to is we wanted you to be able to have the option to keep that weapon in your vehicle so that when you left work and drove home that you would have it in that car. Basically right now, under the state of Tennessee law, it says that a business owner out here can say that you can't have that weapon in your vehicle on their parking lot. Now, we passed a little something this year, but it doesn't go where it needs to. Basically, what it did was decriminalize, because up until that point, even though the Constitution says that you could, in fact, carry your weapon about the state with you if you weren't using it for an illegal purpose, an employer could write a policy and say, well, we don't allow guns on our parking lots, and if they caught you with one there, you'd lose your job. Well, they passed this bill last year. We tried to get it 2 years ago, and you remember that very well. There was that whole brouhaha that wound up costing Deborah Maggart her seat.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we got all involved in that, and that was every bit over the parking lot law at that point. And simply what we asked them to do was allow us to have what 20 other states in the union have. I can very well remember that the people that lined up against this in the legislature were FedEx and Volkswagen and the Chamber of Commerce, but we had the lobbyist for FedEx on the stand up there in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I believe it was Senator Bell asked him, he said, you know, you've got this going on in all these other 20 states. Has it created a hardship for you there at all? And he said, well, no, it really hadn't. Has it cost you any additional money? He said, well, no, it hasn't, because he was under oath. He had to tell the truth. It hasn't been a problem in any of the other states where they passed this bill. And what we've got now, this last year, they passed what they call the parking lot bill, or guns and trunks, as they call it. But you can still be fired if that company has a policy saying that you can't have that weapon on their property. You no longer will face a criminal statute under the state of Tennessee, because that's what they actually got passed this last time. But if that company still has a policy in their handbook that says you can't have that weapon on their property, you can lose your job. And we went so far as to approach the attorney general. Now, what happened after they passed this bill, the lieutenant governor of the state of Tennessee said, well, it was our legislative intent that.
But Richard, I'm going to have to break in here. I got to do a quick read, and we'll come right back to this topic. Our friendly local Republican spokesman, Duke Brooks, calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy and Whitaker Chambers. So what would you expect? Get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hanger-flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. 6 Eastern Central on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. Phone number is 718-305-7176. I'm your host, Dave Vance, and we're on the line with Richard Archie from the Tennessee Firearms Association, and we're talking about the parking lot bill. It goes by many other names as well. Real quick, Richard, before we get into what they said, you know, what Lieutenant Governor said his intent was. Now, let's talk about the 2 years ago, there was a big issue on the property rights versus Second Amendment rights. And I think, if I remember correctly, the Farm Bureau had also teamed up with FedEx
That's correct.
Now, okay.
And I never understood that. Here's the deal. We had an exemption in the bill at that point that said no family farm could be involved, that there was no exemption for that. Basically, what the law said in 2 years ago when we tried to get that one passed, we were talking about stores and factories, and farms were completely excised out of that. It did not affect them whatsoever. and I never understood the Farm Bureau. The first thing, and my biggest problem with that is, you know, who in the Farm Bureau asked the farmers what they thought? I've talked to a lot. You know, I'm from an agricultural background myself, and I've got a lot of friends that are farmers. And I called everyone, and I'm talking about big guys that got big farms across the state of Tennessee. I said, "Will you ever talk to them about this?" Nope. Nobody ever asked us the question. You would think that if the Farm Bureau is going to represent the farmers of the state of Tennessee, that they would have at least done a poll. I have not found anybody that said there was ever a question asked of the farmers in the state of Tennessee about whether they wanted or did not want that bill. And it really didn't affect them in the first place because single-family dwellings were excised out of this across the board.
Yeah.
And
we got to go to the caller real quick.
Okay.
Take a call real quick.
Caller,
you have a question?
I have two questions. What's your favorite caliber and bathtub or shower?
My favorite caliber is whatever will take to get a job done, and there are specific needs and specific deals. And the other side of it is really not anybody else's business.
Thank you, caller. Okay. Anyway, now let's talk about the whole property thing here for a while, because I heard some people saying, well, you don't have a right to bring your vehicle on my property if I don't want it, if you have a gun in there and I don't want you to have it. Now, when I pull onto your property, or if I pull onto public property, do I still own my vehicle?
Yes. And what
it's
we
still private property,
to,
correct?
Yes, that's correct. What we've tried to make people understand from the wheels up inside that vehicle, it's your private property. And you've been invited to any place that we had covered underneath that bill as written. You were invited in. We're talking about they invited you in to go to work there. They invite you in to go shopping there. They invite you in to a parking lot. They have, you know, it's not like you're going in there and busting the gate down and going and parking your car at somebody else's location and then walking 2 miles to do something else. What we were talking about is a situation where you're invited onto that place. And literally, you know, why wouldn't they say at this point, well, we don't think you ought to be able to have a set of golf clubs in your car? You know,
what if they don't like the bumper sticker on your vehicle?
Well, you know, it's the same thing across the board. I've been fighting a situation with the state of Tennessee over the course of the last year and a half where we have been discussing the rights of individuals to say anything they want to. Per the way they're talking and the guys that I've been dealing with, they say, oh, you can say anything you want to. You put anything on that bumper. Well, if that's in fact the case, then that means that vehicle belongs to you, that's your property. It does not belong to the individual that you work for or to the store that you are going in to shop at. And so, in fact, where the tire hits that parking lot from there up, it's your property, and their property is on the parking lot. And so we never said that you had the right to strap that gun on and walk across
and
that parking lot. That's correct.
Yep.
It was always intended to be locked up and stored in that vehicle so that you would have access to it for your commute to and from that location.
Yep. Richard, I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll get right back to you.
Okay.
This is Inside Tennessee.
It feels like you're frozen, petrified. You're struggling with your mortgage payments. The bills begin to pile up. Not knowing what to do, you do nothing at all. And that's the worst thing you can do. Because if you take action, if you do something about your mortgage problems, you're far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Making Home Affordable is a free government program. Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about the options that are right for you. Real help, real answers, right now. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov and do something about your mortgage problems. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. We have Richard Archie from the Tennessee Firearms Association with us. Richard, the parking lot bill was passed, but it was passed with some flaws because essentially your employer can still fire you. So what needs to happen, and what kind of complications do you see this upcoming session on this?
Well, I mean, there were several flaws in the bill as written, and we tried to point that out to the individuals who carried it. In the Senate, that was the Lieutenant Governor. In the House, that was Jeremy Fashion. And if you go back and look at the debates that happened in chambers and in the committees, you'll find out that, you know, people asked Fazian especially, and he said, no, it's our intent not to insert ourselves between the employer in the state of Tennessee in an at-will work environment. So in other words, that means that it's okay with the legislature if you get fired because you have that weapon. You turn around and the lieutenant governor said, no, 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 wait a minute. It is our legislative intent that if you let somebody go, if you terminate them because they're exercising a constitutional right and they've got that permit, that we want you to face a lawsuit. In fact, in his statement that he put out in response to what he called the muddying of the situation by the attorney general, in two different sentences, he's got two different statements. And, you know, it's just in the second sentence on it, you know, what he says is that he doesn't want to insert himself in the employee-employer relationship. And then he turned around and says in the fifth sentence, he warns the employers that if they exercise that at-will doctrine to call somebody their job, he intends to see that they're sued. I just don't get that. But I think what you're going to find out coming up with an election year next year, that, and I've heard Fazian say this, and I've heard the lieutenant governor say, we're probably going to have to go back and clean this legislation up. The other thing that's really dangerous about this is the way they wrote it. It has to be in a wholly owned vehicle. If you're in your wife's car, if you're in a rented vehicle, you could be charged criminally for that because of the way they've got the bill written. And this was made patently obvious to them. We wrote them letters and said, please take a look at this. This is going to be a real problem. But I think they're going to have to fix that as well because you know as well as I do, you may have to have your car worked on. You may have to pick up a rental. Should you be disarmed simply because you don't own that vehicle you're in, that's another one of those things that's got to be cleaned up. And I think, I may be incorrect, but I think they intend to go back next year and do that just prior to the election coming up, and that way they can pat themselves on the back and make it look like they were really listening to their constituents again. Because when it comes down to an election year, everybody wants to grab that banner of Second Amendment friendly and go running around the track with it.
Isn't that what politicians do best? They break something, then they fix it, and they want you to give them credit for it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, and again, the thing about it is, all we're trying to do in the state of Tennessee is to get a reasonable situation with respect to your ability to have a legally owned instrument to provide for your self-defense. You know, the thing that most people don't understand, they see this protect and defend mantra that we hear talked about all the time from law enforcement. And I have a world of respect for law enforcement. I've got family involved in it, and a lot of my best friends are law enforcement officers. But if you get them one-on-one and ask them if they're responsible for your security and safety, they'll tell you absolutely not. There are a ton of Supreme Court cases and just volumes of case law that say, wait a minute, you know, the Second Amendment on the federal level and Article 1, Section 26 in Tennessee are where we lay the responsibility for the production of security and safety. We do not anticipate or expect, nor do we hold law enforcement responsible for security and safety for the average individual. And I think, you know, that's another one of those things where we need to educate our children, we need to educate our populace. They're not responsible for protecting us. There's, on an average right now, with the tax situation where it is and the cities being out of money and the state being broke, there's about one law enforcement officer to every 7,500 citizens.
They couldn't do it if they wanted to. Couldn't do it if they wanted to. Hey, I'm going to have to go to a caller real quick here. We're running down out of time here. I think we have Barbara on the line from Women
That
Patriots.
Would be me. Hello, how are you? Great
Doing
show
fine.
Going
How's
on.
It going tonight? Well, thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
And, you know, I just got to say, it really irks the daylights out of me when people think that it's not your God-given right to protect yourself. You know, those people are so stupid.
Life,
Sorry,
liberty, pursuit of happiness. Life is the first one. You got to be able to protect that.
You know, I don't understand people. They're just not all there, obviously. Anyway, as for Women Patriots tomorrow night, Women Patriots is going to team up with Lady Patriots, Julia Saban and Dr. Sharon Schutz. They write for women, for Lady Patriots, and I'm really excited to have them on. We're going to have a blast of a show. There's going to be four women going on about politics. So come join us right here on conservativenationradio.org. And our start time is 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 Central.
Well, thank you, Barbara. I'm sure it'll be a great show. And look forward
thank
to it.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Bye.
Richard, okay, so we've got to fix the bill. You know, a minute ago you said something that kind of struck me. They said that in this bill that if you're it does not apply if you're using a rental or if it's your wife's vehicle. It's got to be your vehicle.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Okay, self-defense is for you. It's not for the vehicle. So what? Who came up with that language? That's insane.
Well, here's the thing. I think what happened in the last session, the legislature was trying to straddle the fence on this thing. They were trying to be able to turn to the gun-owning public over here, to people who understand the rules and necessities of life, and say, guys, we got you back. We're going to set you up to where you'll be able to keep your weapon for your traverse to and from your home. And they wanted to be able to turn without moving their feet and look at, you know, big business over here and the Chamber of Commerce, which is one of our biggest foes on this issue, and say, hey, we held the line right here. We've given them a fake, and we've allowed them to think that we've done something, but you can still fire them. And what you're seeing across the board right now is all the larger law firms are coming out, and they're sending letters to their employees that work for them, or the employers that hire them to do their business law, and they're telling them, all right, here's what you can't do. You can't allow this, you can't allow this, and it's just so muddy right now that I think what you're going to see is they're going to have to do something. They're either going to have to strike the complete law and go back to square one, or they're going to have to change it and make it where it's viable and useful, because right now it is, you know, extremely tenuous. Nobody understands what's going on. Everybody's scared to death of, you know, exercising their constitutional rights. And what it boils down to, in the state of Tennessee, if you go back to Andrew v. State, it's kind of simple. And if we've got just a minute, I will read to you what that says.
We got about 4 minutes left, actually less than that.
All right, I can get that done.
Do what you can.
It says the right to keep and bear arms necessarily involves the right to purchase them, to keep them in a state of efficiency for use, to purchase and provide ammunition suitable for such arms, and to keep them in repair. And clearly, for this purpose, a man would have the right to carry them to and from his home, and no one could claim that the legislature has the right to punish him for it without violating this clause of the Constitution, and that's Article 1, Section 26. It says, bearing arms for the common defense may well be held to be a political right, or for the protection and maintenance of such rights intended to be guaranteed, but the right to keep them with all that is implied fairly as an incident to this right is a private individual right guaranteed to the citizen, not the soldier. Now, that's what our Supreme Court said in 1871, and it has not been challenged or changed since then. And I would challenge every legislator to go back and read this. I can't tell you the number of times that I've thrown this decision down on a desk in Nashville, and you know that I go up there and talk to these guys, and they've never heard of this ruling. Because,
well, there's a lot of things they've never heard of. Yeah, we find out there's a lot of things they've never heard of. People should not assume that our legislators know the Constitution, know the law. That's, you know, that's a dangerous assumption. Richard, and I don't know if we got about a minute and a half here, but for instance, FedEx, they act as if it's their property, but weren't taxpayer dollars, don't those normally go towards the parking lots of major businesses? Is that accurate?
You know, in the state of Tennessee, anytime you bring an individual company in, we give them all kind of tax advantages. We bring the utilities to them. We build the parking lots. We do the dirt work for them. The state taxpayer does that. Nobody goes out here anymore and spends their money to purchase land. Most of it's leased.
I would, in fact, I had at one time the percentage of FedEx Ground that's leased. It was like 92%. They don't own anything. It's not their private property. What they do is they work close to and around airports, and the citizens own every bit of that. But, you know, again, it's they use this perception out here that, oh, a man's property, he ought to be able to say, well, it's not their property. It's your and my property. It's just like the highway. Any highway running through any state in the union, you're able to carry your weapons on that highway legally by federal law. Now, you may not be able to carry them loaded, but you can have them with you. And what these people are saying is, even though we paid for these parking lots out here, we shouldn't have the right or the ability to keep that weapon even unloaded in that vehicle, so we'd have it.
Richard, hey, we are absolutely out of time. They're going to kill the show here in just a second. Thank you for coming on. Great information. I'd love to have you back, and we'll definitely have you during session. Been listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio with Dave Vance, and we will see you next week.